Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, or good night, depending on what time you're listening. This is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode 41, The Slumping Celtics. And I'm really pleased to be joined by a guy I've worked with for a number of years. He's the top columnist at the Boston Globe on basketball, Gary Washburn. And Gary, first of all, welcome to the show. And second of all, let's get right into it. What on earth is wrong with the Boston Celtics? This team was supposed to run away with the Eastern Conference, and that is not exactly happening.
Yeah, it's been a tough season, a lot of adjustments, and I don't think they envisioned that. You know, like, everybody knew that there was going to be some changes considering the returns of Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were going to have to adjust, but no one had any idea it would just take this long. That let's face it, Chris, like, Hayward was going to be basically probably 40% of the player that he was in Utah when he came back, and that it was going to take months for him to kind of get his feet, you know, under him and get back to form, that Jaylen Brown would struggle so much, you know, that they would have some various injuries, that, you know, offensively they would have so much trouble at the beginning that they just – it was just a lot that just happened. It was one of those Murphy's Law things. Anything – that could go wrong with this team has gone wrong, and they still feel pretty decent, 25-17 entering tonight's game against the Nets. But they got to get it together soon. They're 6.5 back of Toronto, and if they kind of, you know, go as they are, I mean, they're going to be the fourth seed. I mean, they're going to be in a 4-5. Battle with Indiana or Philadelphia or something like that in the first round. You don't want that. So they got to get it together. And you see signs of it. When they play well, they play really well, Chris. But then there are times the other night against Orlando, I mean, they controlled most of the game, but they just fall asleep. And, you know, a 17-1 run they allowed in the first half, a 19-2 run in the second half, and then those that costs you games. And they've got to step up.
Yeah, I watched the end of that game, and it wasn't a particularly bad shot that Jason Tatum got off right before the buzzer. It was a contested shot, but it was a makeable shot from about 18 feet from the corner. But afterwards, Kyrie Irving was mad that he didn't get the last shot. From what you can ascertain, what was the play that was called, and why was Kyrie Irving so upset?
Well, Kyrie wanted – okay, so basically the way they defended it, they were going to let Horford catch the inbounds because he was 18 feet, 19 feet away from the basket. So what Kyrie wanted was he wanted Horford – it was 2.7 left. Kyrie was in the backcourt, so Kyrie was going to run. Hopefully the ball, in his eyes, was going to get inbounded to Horford. Horford – make a little toss to Kyrie, who pulls up from 18 and hits one of those mid-rangers. But Hayward ends up throwing it to Tatum. And as much as Tatum has great potential, as much as he's a good player, he's still finding himself, and he's still not a clutch shooter, and he still needs to be more efficient. You know, he's not Kobe yet. Even though he worked with Kobe this summer, he's not Kobe yet. And so, you know, I think the Magic were fine with him taking a contested fadeaway step back 18-footer to try to tie the game, and obviously he missed. And so that's just – and Kyrie was like – obviously he wants to take the final shot, but he also wanted to work with Al Horford in terms of – because Al knows where he likes the ball, and Al would have made the right basketball play. So there was a lot of issues there that Kyrie had. I think this was kind of a testament to his frustration in terms of just the team and finishing out games and that type of thing. He wants to win badly. He's trying to be a leader, the leader that he didn't get a chance to be in Cleveland. And, you know, sometimes he's a little, probably in this case, a little too demonstrative in his frustration.
It happens from time to time. And Kyrie did speak at shoot around today. There's nice story from Ian Begley of ESPN up on ESPN.com. And Irving was saying that his team is feeling the burden of expectations this season. And quote, "It came from a place where I asked for a trade and I'm coming here and I believe in this organization and I want these young guys to be successful. In order to do that, we all got to be on the same page and have that mindset that a championship or nothing. And sometimes that can get the best of me at times." And so clearly Kyrie is frustrated with the lack of success that this team is having. And my question to you, Gary, is we all know that Anthony Davis is going to become available at a certain point, whether it's this season, whether it's over the summer, or whether it's two summers from now. But do you think that Danny Ainge would move Kyrie Irving in a trade in order to get Anthony Davis on his team this season? Because as we both know, Kyrie and Anthony Davis can't be on the same team this season, but they could be on the same team next season due to NBA collective bargaining rules.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't see the Celtics blowing everything up. Because remember, Kyrie's a free agent after this. He can opt out. So if you're the Pelicans and you make that deal, you'd have to get a guarantee that either A, Kyrie opts in for that next year for 2019-20, or that he will re-sign a max deal, right? So does that help your team to have Kyrie and Drew Holiday in your backcourt? I don't think the Pelicans do that. I don't think the Celtics do that. I think obviously they're going to explore anything that will help their team and upgrade their team this summer. I don't think them moving Kyrie before this year for Anthony Davis has any chance of happening. I think the Pelicans are just still trying to figure out what the heck they are and whether they can compete in the West. I mean, they got a couple of big games. They got a big game tonight against the Clippers. I mean, they got to start putting together some wins. If not, they have to figure out what they're going to do. But I don't think that would happen this season. Now, this summer, who knows what the Pelicans would ask for. Obviously, Tatum would be the central part of that deal. But if I'm the Celtics, okay, if you want to get Anthony Davis and Kyrie and Hayward, that's three max guys on your team. You're swimming in luxury taxes if you make that happen. And then you've got Al Horford, who is likely to opt out of his deal this summer and be a free agent, but he'll sign a lesser, probably a longer-term extension at less money. So you could have three guys in the $30 million neighborhood, then another guy making 20. I mean, that's 110 for four guys. So you'd have to find someone to probably take Hayward off your hands. And will the Pelicans take Hayward? That's, you know, would you and Bill Vince? I don't think you would do that. You know, although he has one more year on his deal, and he could opt out after next year. But if you're Gordon Hayward, you're not – the way you're playing now and being 28, I don't see him opting out of the final year of his deal at $30 million. So it gets real convoluted. The money, the Hayward deal, because the Hayward deal right now, Chris, is coming back. I won't say already haunt them, but it's going to eventually haunt them unless Hayward steps up his game and gets healthy. It could be next year. Let's face it. He came off a catastrophic injury. You know, it's going to take time. And they're going to need Hayward to come back and show the value of his contract. If not, that could be an albatross.
Yeah, the only way I see the Hayward trade, the Irving trade working before February 7th trade deadline is if a third team is found, so that Kyrie is rerouted to a third team in a destination where he might be happy. And that could be the New York Knicks and that could be the Brooklyn Nets. As everyone knows, going into the trading deadline, there's about a million things discussed and then there's probably about a dozen that are going to happen. But if Kyrie Irving is dealt and can be dealt to a place that's an acceptable landing zone for him and he'll agree to do a supermax or to do a max with that team, then maybe a three-way team or a four-way team could work. But let's look at tonight's game with the Brooklyn Nets, Gary, because the Brooklyn Nets were one of the best teams in the NBA over the month of December, and they're in the playoff picture right now. They might be one player away from being a playoff contender that can actually win a first-round series. When you look at tonight's game at Brooklyn, what are some of the things you're looking to see both out of the Celtics and out of the Brooklyn Nets?
Well, it's going to be tough, Chris, for the Celtics. I mean, you know, no Kyrie Irving tonight and no Marcus Smart. So you got a new backcourt. It's probably going to be probably Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. Okay, so it all depends on two guys there who could have, you know, either could strike for 30, either could go 3 for 15 from the field. It just, they've been, both have been kind of up and down this year. So that plays a lot into it. The two teams played last week. The Nets were just, I mean, decimated with injuries. You know, no Hollis Jefferson. They didn't have a lot of their guys. I think Hollis Jefferson tonight is questionable to play, which I think is good for the Nets. You know, and then you had last week kind of a disengaged D'Angelo Russell. Russell just acted like, you know, Russell's a guy who, I mean, if the light's on all the time, he's a very good player, but there's just nights he just doesn't register. The light isn't on. And that was the case last week in Boston where, you know, I think he was like 2 for 6 from the field. He just wasn't there. But I think if the Nets play well at home, they play very hard. And so I think it'll be a very close game. I think it's a toss-up, to be honest with you. You know, given what happened last week and stuff, it's kind of blowing them out. And the fact that no Kyrie, no Marcus Smart defensively, you know, and so that could open the door for guys like D'Angelo, Spencer Dinwiddie to play big games. Jared Allen, you know, is going to have to play a factor in there too. Let's see if Hollis Jefferson comes back. But I think it's going to be a dogfight. You know, I think that the Nets are a team that plays hard, and they're in the 7th spot. I mean, they got something to play for. It's no more playing for the future, developing young guys, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this would be an amazing step for the Nets to make the playoffs. And at this point, they're 7th. I mean, in the way the East has turned out, Chris, I mean, you know, and I mean, the East is just turned out to be as terrible as it has been in years, where you got, you know, basically the top 5 teams, and then you got the rest of the guys, and you got, I mean, even, you know, the Wizards at 8 games under 500 are 2 back of the 8th spot. I mean, they got something to play for. I mean, you know, the only team, the Hawks, 13-30, they're 6.5 out of the 8th spot. I mean, they're a 5-game winning streak. You know, not to say that would happen, they're a 5-game winning streak from being pushing for the 8th spot. So, I mean, you got a lot of really questionable teams here, but the Nets are probably the best of that questionable group of Charlotte and Orlando and Detroit and Washington. So they got something to play for. So I expect a very highly competitive game tonight. The crowd's going to be out. The Celtics always draw good crowds. There'll be a good Celtic contingent there. And we'll see what happens without Kyrie and without Marcus Smart. And the Celtics need to win this game. I mean, they got Toronto coming up on Wednesday, so you're talking about potentially four losses in a row if they lose against the Nets. And then you're talking about, you know, kind of, big, you know, climbing back up that hill again, you know, and they got to be better. 10-12 on the road, 2 losses in a row, you know, a bad loss to Miami, I thought, and Orlando. You can't lose. They've lost to the Magic twice this year. It just shows what kind of team they can be when they're good and when they're bad.
Yeah, I've had a couple of Nets writers on the show, Gary, and the Nets writers are adamant that Sean Marks is not going to make any kind of a crazy move. He's all part of the process, building for the future, keeping cap space for next summer. But I'm at the same time, they're using Ed Davis as their backup center. And Ed Davis is a 6'9 power forward. And he can't just shoot free throws. If it's a close game, you watch Celtics are going to intentionally foul Ed Davis if he's on the court, try to put him on the line and play the clock game. But You mentioned Kyrie is out, and Terry Rozier will be starting at point guard. Terry Rozier was an excellent point guard in the playoffs for the Celtics last year, but this season he's only averaging 8.5 points, and 4 rebounds and 2.8 assists. He's definitely taken a step back. He's shooting only 35% from 3-point range. Terry Rozier got the makings of a starting point guard who can be a franchise type player as his career develops. As we both know, point guards are the hardest position to learn in the NBA. Sometimes it takes you 3, 4, 5 years to really master it. Chauncey Billups being a case in point. That guy got traded 100 times before he kind of found his groove with the Detroit Pistons and went to numerous conference finals in a row.
You know, I think with Terry, it's been tough on him because, you know, he had such a breakout playoffs, such a coming out party last year, and kind of developed in one of those, like, up-and-coming point guards to watch. Then all of a sudden here comes Kyrie, and he comes off the bench, and then Terry doesn't know really, okay, what should I do? Should I be Vinny Johnson? Should I come off the bench and just try to light it up? And I think Jaylen Brown's going through the same situation. What do I do when I come off the bench? How do I react to this? And I think with Terry Rozier, you know, he's just got to play within himself. When he plays within himself, when he is just unselfish, when he takes the right shots, he's a very good point guard. It's only when he tries to go tit for tat with guys, when he tries to show what he can do, that I think he gets himself in trouble. And this year he's gotten himself in a lot of trouble because he's tried to show what he can do. I don't know if he's auditioning for other teams. I mean, and it's hard because, as you know, when guys see their money on the line, he's a restricted free agent this summer. So obviously he's got to play for an offer sheet. Restricted free agency is really hard for these guys because some of these guys don't get offers. Let's face it, there's guys who think that they're going to get these, you know, max offers or $18, $19 million a year offers in restricted free agency, and they don't. And they end up, Marcus Smart last year learned that lesson. He ended up re-signing with the Celtics, but he had to wait all summer. He was hurt about the situation. You know, he didn't sign until almost August in terms of just his re-up because he didn't get an offer. You know, only two or three guys last summer got offers. It was the Zach LaVine deal that didn't go with Sacramento. So who knows what's going to happen with Terry. It is a team, and you got to look at teams around the league, Chris. The bad teams, I mean, most of them have a pretty capable point guard. Your Sacramento would be De'Aaron Fox. You know, Cleveland with Colin Sexton. I mean, you got the teams that – Phoenix is the only team, I think, you know, that – and who knows how much Phoenix likes him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the teams in the league, you know, most of them have capable point guards. The point guard is a position you got to have. So who makes an offer for Terry Rozier? Who makes that $20 million a year offer for him? Who saves up the cap space? We really don't know. Or who makes a trade offer, a sign and trade, or something like that. All that, I think, is playing into Terry's head, and he's pressing way too much. But when he's good, he's good. And he's had a troublesome season because of the role change, because of the decrease in minutes. And he has a definite role on the team. He's very important. He just has to kind of understand that I've got to take a bullet for this year, and then next year, hopefully, in his eyes, I will be able to be that guy who starts on an NBA team and has my own team.
Yeah, it remains to be seen that, and a lot of guys, you make a great point about restricted free agency. A lot of guys just didn't get paid last summer when they expected to get paid. The only guy who did in restricted free agency is Jabari Parker, who got $20 million from the Bulls. And he quickly wore out his welcome now, and he's sitting on the end of the bench waving a towel and waiting to get traded. So restricted free agency is difficult. Teams often play hardball, and sometimes that creates a little bit of ill will and bad blood between the player and the team, especially if the player signs at a number that is much lower than what he was expecting. By the way, tonight, the Boston Celtics are only favored by 3 points against the Brooklyn Nets. And that gives me a chance to plug our sponsor. Yeah, this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but we're sponsored by BetDSI.com. And that's one of the top offshore sports gambling books in the world. If you go to BetDSI.com and you use bonus code BBALL1000, they'll match your first $1,000 of U.S. money. If you're listening overseas, you got to go to BetDSI.eu. And same thing, use the bonus code BBALL1000, and they'll match it with another $1,000, and then you got $2,000 to go out and gamble with and make big bets, small bets, whatever you want. Gary, gambling is not illegal in the United States anymore, and there are 8 states now that allow legalized sports betting. Connecticut is fast-tracking its way to becoming the 9th state. Ted Leonsis' team, the Washington Wizards, They were doing in-game betting on the scoreboard the other night down in D.C. What about Massachusetts? How's Massachusetts going to come along with legalized sports betting?
That I really don't know. So far, nothing in terms of like what the Wizards are doing. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, they've got casinos coming up in Springfield, one, and one that's coming to Boston. So I think something like that will be on the horizon, obviously, with sports betting at these casinos. But Massachusetts just has not taken on that topic. That has not been a topic in terms of legalized sports betting that's been very much discussed much at all in the state. So I think they're probably a few years from, let's say, a New Jersey or other states that are legalizing sports betting. You know, that's interesting. The NBA, is, as you know, Chris, is kind of embracing the sports betting aspect of it. And you know, who knows how that's going to go. But, you know, let's face it, you know, the fact that this information, like let's say a Kyrie Irving not playing tonight is extremely important to bettors. And extremely that information has to get out. So tonight's game, 3 points, I think that's pretty fair. Because the Celtics on paper are the better team, but it's going to be a war. And I couldn't tell people how to bet this game at all, but I think that's a fair point spread from what I look at, and the fact that both teams are going to be playing are in a sense pretty desperate. The Celtics are a team that is should play very desperate tonight. So it should be a great game.
Yeah, and Gary, when we look around the Eastern Conference, you know, we've talked about how there are 5 teams at the top, and then there's Miami, and there's Brooklyn, and Charlotte, and Orlando, and Detroit, and Washington are just right outside. But out of those top 5 teams, Toronto, Milwaukee, Indiana, Philly, Boston, which one strikes you as the most championship worthy?
I would probably say right now, Toronto, I mean, they do what they're supposed to do. The Raptors take care of business. I think they're doing with the other teams in the East. Milwaukee, too, though. I mean, but the Raptors, they win the games they're supposed to win. As you, I mean, Chris, they won 5 in a row, 8-2 in the last 10. They go into Washington yesterday on a Sunday lazy Sunday afternoon. They you know, Bradley Beal goes nuts. They still pull out the double overtime victory. They don't let down too often. And a good – I mean, look at their road record, Chris, 15-8. I mean, that's basically, you know, almost 667 road – that's almost 667 on the road. So that's good. That's a good road percentage. The Celtics, for example, the Sixers are both 10-12. That's not good, you know. So to me, a good road team is the best – sign of a championship caliber team, and they play well away from home. And so I would have to say the Raptors. The Bucks have had a lot of home games. They're 19-4 at home, only 11-8 on the road. So I think they're kind of second, and they blow teams out, Chris. A rim differential of 9.3. So when you play the Bucks, you're going to lose by 9. That's Giannis, but I don't know if they're quite ready on that level of Toronto. And the rest, I think right now Indiana, Boston, and Philadelphia are in that second tier. Now, can either of those three escape that second tier and get to the first tier? I think it's possible, but at this point, it's not the case. The 76ers and the Pacers are all in the second tier. I give it to Toronto. That's the championship-caliber team. That's the team I would say right now is a favorite to meet, whether it be Denver, Golden State, Houston, Oklahoma City, whoever, in the NBA Finals.
Hey, I don't necessarily disagree with you on anything except for one team, the Indiana Pacers, who are sitting in third place at 28-14. They got a 5.3-point differential. They're scoring 108 per game. And here's the interesting thing, Gary. The Indiana Pacers right now are 60-1 to win the NBA title. Whenever I throw that at an NBA writer, they go, huh? And because Toronto's 7-1, Boston's 9-1, Philly is 16-1, Milwaukee is 15-1, and Indiana, which is bunched up with them, is 60-1. What do you make of that?
You know, Chris, what I make of that is, one, there's not a lot of people who know about the Pacers. Nobody watches the Pacers. They're on the national TV the other night against the Knicks because, let's face it, it was against the Knicks. The Knicks still have, believe it or not, as you know, some type of national TV draw. But people just don't know a lot about the Pacers. And two, Chris, the Pacers don't play well against the elite teams. They've beaten the heck out of the bad teams. They came to Boston the other night. Boston beat them by 27 points. Indiana's got to prove it can play against the Toronto, you know, against the Milwaukee. They've got to prove that they can win, one, outside of Baker's Life Fieldhouse, and two, they've got to prove that they can play with the elite teams in the NBA. I think if you look at their wins, Chris, a lot of them over the Chicago's and the Charlotte's, they've got to prove that they can beat the elite teams. And, you know, Boston, Houston, lost to Philly, two losses to Houston. I'm looking here. They lost to Charlotte, lost to San Antonio. You know, these games, they lost at Lakers and at Sacramento. I think that there's kind of a belief there that's like, well, they're pretty good, but what about the good teams? You know, they won six in a row recently. The best team in that group that they beat was Brooklyn. You know, they beat the Wizards, the Hawks twice, Chicago. Then they come back and lose at Toronto. They get blown out at Boston. So I think that there's kind of like this hesitation when it comes to the Pacers because they have not done so well against the elite teams of the NBA. They've beaten the heck out of the Clevelands. They've beaten the heck out of the Chicago's and the bad teams around the league. But let's see what happens when they get into a seven-game series with another playoff-caliber team. Let's see what happens over the next few games. Chris, I'm looking at the schedule. Philadelphia at home, you know, they get Toronto later this month at home, and then they get the Warriors at home. That should be an interesting three games of toward the end of this month. The Sixers, the Raptors, and the Warriors all come to Indiana. Let's see how they go through that stretch. And I think, you know, maybe that 60-1 goes down, but I think that's a little high, no question. If you had told me 30, I'd be like, okay. 60 sounds to me like, you know, that's the Lakers or something like that, or a team that, you know, Dallas or something like that. But I think there just isn't a high level of belief in the Pacers.
Yeah, the Lakers right now are at 20-1, and Dallas is at 250. Yeah, well, Dallas is at 250-1, but you know that the odds often reflect where the book thinks that half of the money is going to come in on either side. The Pacers are actually right now 18-1 to win the Eastern Conference, but let's turn our attention to the West, Gary, because you cover the whole league, and right now Golden State, Steph Curry hit 11 threes last night. He was out of his mind. But Golden State's still in second place behind the Denver Nuggets. And then Oklahoma City is three games back in the West. And Portland, playing real well, is in fourth in the West. Out of all the teams in the West, the obvious answer is Denver. So I'm going to tell you can't answer Denver. Out of all the teams in the West, who's been the most surprising to you, either in a positive or a negative way?
I'm going to say Chris Sacramento. I mean, my goodness, 22-21, one half game out the eighth spot, and they've got to determine, like D-Box, with 39 games left, needs to determine whether he wants to make a run for the playoffs or you want to stick to the hold up, you know, stick like we talked about with Sean Marks earlier. Do you want to just hold on to these assets and just kind of see what happens without making any moves? Because at this point, you've got a legitimate shot at making the playoffs. I can't tell you what the Lakers are going to do. The Lakers lost at home last night to Cleveland. I thought it was embarrassing. Cleveland ran them off the court pretty much, just like the Knicks ran them off the court a couple of weeks ago. I know you don't have LeBron James, but, I mean, you got so much talent. You can't lose to the Cavaliers at home. I mean, it's just unacceptable. And it's just, that's absurd. And, you know, if you look, they've got a 0.8 point differential. So they play a lot of close games, and they don't win convincingly. So the Lakers could drop. Utah, who knows what they'll make of Utah. I mean, Utah's got a lot of home games in the second half of the season. They have had a – I mean, my goodness, Chris, I don't know if you looked at their schedule. They've had probably one of the worst schedules in recent history for them going on the road, going to the East already three times. I mean, they have, you know, they've already played a league-high 25 road games. So their schedule in the second half should be very nice and comfortable at Vivek Smart Arena, and they should make a run. But I'm going to say the Kings are the most surprising team. Everybody else, I mean, the Rockets had their ups and downs. The Blazers beat at 26-18. The Thunder came back from an 0-4 start, and they're the third seed. The Clippers have been a pleasant surprise. They play hard every night. We'll see if they can maintain that and get healthier. San Antonio's been a pleasant surprise. They've played well. I mean, I saw them in person beat the heck out of the Celtics, and they beat the Thunder the other night before losing to them in the rematch. But I'm going to say those Sacramento Kings. I'm going to give them some credit finally, Chris. 22-21. They're competitive. You know, they play. They're 9-11 on the road, which is pretty good for a team that's 500. I mean, they're not. It used to be when the Kings came to town, it was an easy, no-problem victory. 9-11 shows me that they're playing – when the team starts playing better on the road, they've got a better road record than Houston, and they got a better road record than Portland. So, to me, that says a lot, and San Antonio and the Lakers. So that says a lot about the progress of the Kings. They're my surprise team in the West.
And I can't disagree with you, but I will tell you this. I think Vlade Divac and – Brandon Williams and Peja Stojakovic are going to be very, very busy at the trade deadline. They're the only team that has significant cap room, and they have a bunch of expiring contracts, including Iman Shumpert and Zach Randolph and Ben Backlemore. They can broker just about anything, and they're going to be brokering a bunch of things because they've been looking for a wing, and they've been looking for first-round picks since last summer, and the price of their cap room goes up on a daily basis. That right now the Sacramento Kings are sitting at 150-1 to win the title, and another team that you mentioned that's been playing out of their minds and just beating teams that shouldn't be beaten, that's the San Antonio Spurs. I'm interested to see what they do going into the trade deadline. And then the Utah Jazz, who you made a ton of good points about, right now they're 66-1 to win the NBA title. And like you said, the schedule will be favorable to them, and they're riding a three-game winning streak right now. But Gary Washburn, and I should mention, you can follow him on Twitter. He's G Washburn Globe on Twitter. You can follow me. I'm at Sheridan Hoops on Twitter. Gary, right now the MVP race has tightened up with James Harden just going nuts in Chris Paul's absence, putting up multiple 30-point games, although, man, was he misfiring last night. Took 17 three-pointers and missed 16, if I'm not incorrect. Right now, James Harden is the favorite to win the MVP at 3-2, and Giannis Antetokounmpo is just a little bit behind him. And then the field breaks down like this: LeBron James 8-1, Steph Curry 9-1, Kawhi Leonard 10-1, Anthony Davis somehow is at 13-1, despite where the Pelicans are sitting. Joel Embiid is at 15-1, and Nikola Jokic, who I put $10 on preseason at 100-1. He's down to 40 to 1. He drops week after week after week. How do you see the MVP race right now?
You know, I got to say that it's probably Harden and Antetokounmpo, just in terms of what they've done for their respective teams. You know, I would have said Kawhi, but the fact is that, you know, Leonard is fifth in the league in scoring, and but you maybe want to look at games played. Leonard has played in 35 games, which is eight fewer than, let's say, a Durant. You know, Harden has just had, I mean, he's averaging almost 35 a game. He's shooting 38% from the three. He leads the league in free throw attempts per game. I mean, he has just had a monster season with a team that just doesn't have the talent that it did the year before. You know, Eric Gordon's in and out of the lineup. You know, they're running James Ennis out there. Guys like Daniel House, who's been in the D League up and down since coming out of Texas A&M. Clint Capella has had a very strong year. But if you were to, you know, who's the Rockets' second best player? You know, you say Chris Paul, but Chris Paul has essentially been out of the lineup most of the year too. So I'm going to have to give it to Harden. Some people say Curry. I would have no issue with Curry. I mean, Curry shooting a ridiculous 45% for the three. I mean, you can't how can you argue with that? With Giannis,
his brother could argue with it.
His brother's
shooting him a little bit better this year.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I don't know what they had in the milk when they were growing up, or what they had from dad. But my goodness, they can produce some shooters. But I look at Giannis 17% from the 3-point line. That might hurt him with MVP voting. You know, that's a tough right there. I mean, it's to the point where you just don't even. He's taking 2.5 a game. It's to the point he might not even want to start taking them per game. You know, so if I'm right now, I'd say Harden is my favorite. I would definitely take a long look at Curry. I would definitely take a look at Kawhi. To be Kawhi, 50% from the field, 37% from three. So he's a very good 3-point shooter. You know, I think that's pretty much where you leave it. Paul George has had a strong year, but I don't know if an MVP type year. Anthony Davis, the team just doesn't win enough, unfortunately for him, and that's not his fault. He's giving blood, sweat, and tears every night for the Pelicans. LeBron, I think this absence of missing 9 games, and, you know, now if he comes back and the Lakers win 50, then, you know, he could make a late run at it. Embiid, solid year, but to me what scares me a little bit, Chris, is he's only shooting 48% from the field. Like, he's not making half of his shots. He's a 7'1" center. He should be shooting in the 60s to me. So that's a little disturbing for me. But I think Harden right now, just given what he's done, obviously last night, missing 16 or 17 threes, that's pretty hard to do. You know, I think those guys that shoot at halftime for like a trip to Guam would hit more than, you know, would hit more than one of 17. But, you know, it was just one of those nights. But I think Harden right now is my choice.
Yeah, I really can't disagree with you. He will run hot and cold like that. I was at a game in San Antonio earlier this season, the night that Carmelo Anthony disappeared, and he had one of those games against the Spurs. He just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. Pretty much everybody on the Rockets that night had the flu, and so, you know, that stuff happens. Rockets are back in action tonight at home. Memphis is coming in, and the Rockets are 4.5-point favorites. Gary, what about Jokic? You didn't mention Jokic, who not a lot of people watch because he plays on a team that doesn't get a lot of national TV exposure, but Nikola Jokic is putting together a hell of a season. He's the only point center in the league. He's a great passer, great rebounder. He puts back his own stuff, and he's almost impossible to guard. Again, he was at 100-1 recently, or not recently, over the summer. But the odds on him have dropped down to 40-1. What about him as a legit MVP candidate?
You know, I don't know if it's legit, Chris, simply because, I mean, let's face it, Jokic is a very skilled player. You know, he is kind of the glue of that team. But if you look at his numbers, and I think it's a numbers thing too, in terms of one, less than 20 points a game. When's the last time an MVP has averaged less than fewer than 20 points a game? That, you probably have to go back to maybe, I don't know, maybe maybe the year Bill Walton won it, but usually MVP scores more than 20 a game. His numbers are good, 10.2 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 1.4 steals. But two things, 32% from the three-point line, not good. He was 40 last year, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I think people kind of say, think that Denver's a very deep team. They can run Murray at you, Gary Harris, you know, Millsap who's out, Will Barton. They're a very deep team. The one thing that the Nuggets have done over the last few years quietly, Chris, is build a deep team from all these draft picks, like mid-first round draft picks they've had. They didn't have that big-time lottery pick. You know, Murray was 7th, Harris, I think, was 13th or 14th. They were able to sign Millsap. Will Barton was, you know, signed from Portland. Jokic was a second-round pick. They've been able to build a deep team with medium, moderate salaries with just quietly because they've been sort of like in the middle of the road, middle of the lottery over the last few years, barely missing the playoffs. So I think that the depth of Denver might hurt Jokic because he's not putting up these crazy numbers. And if you look at, I mean, they've got six guys, Chris, averaging in double figures. I'll take Barton out. Five guys, and if you include Malik Beasley, who's averaging 9.9, six. So they're just such a balanced team that the numbers are not going to show for Jokic. So you're going to really have to like all the intangibles he brings and the assists at 7.5, which is very impressive. The rebounds at 10.2. He's almost averaging a trip, you know, 2.5 more assists from a triple double. But I just think the numbers don't jump out at you unless you're a real basketball purist, and that's unfortunate for him, you know. But the Nuggets, number one team, but you look at this roster, I mean, they have just put together, as you know, Chris, a loaded, stacked roster of guys who are all pretty damn good. You know, mm-hmm. no super duper stars, but if you look at this team, you know, they've got production out of Malik Beasley. No one's heard of that guy out of Florida State. Trey Lyles is playing well. Hernan Gomez, you know, the brother of the kid from who's now in Charlotte, the other Hernan Gomez brother. Mason Plumlee has played well, kind of a dirty work guy. Torrey Craig. I mean, they have gotten production from their entire roster. So I think that kind of hurts Jokic because, let's face it, I mean, Murray, you can argue Murray's had a 50-point game, had a 49-point game. I saw a person against the Celtics. Gary Harris, a very skilled player, although he's missed some time. Millsap, a multi-time all-star. So I think that hurts Jokic's chances of the MVP simply because – and then, two, no one knows anything about the guy. You don't know where he's from. He doesn't say much. He just plays ball. And that, unfortunately, no commercial – you're not going to see him on a Nike commercial or whatever shoe company. You're not going to see Jokic on there. And that kind of hurts his stock as well.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. And at the same time, best player on the best team often gets a lot of votes, and there could be some split votes among the Golden State Warriors and among the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think if Kawhi Leonard stays with the Toronto Raptors and they finish number one in the East, I think there's a good case to be made that Kawhi Leonard is going to be the man. And I'm about to throw a curveball at you, Gary, and you better be ready to hit the curveball. You got to learn how to hit the curveball. But before I do, I want to put in one more plug. This show does live on GetMoreSports.com, but we're sponsored by I'm actually sponsored today by two books. I put in a plug for BetDSI.com, but there's another site out of Costa Rica called MyBookie.com. And if you go to MyBookie.com and use bonus code BBALL1000, they'll match your initial deposit up to 50%. So now here comes your curveball. There's football going on right now. We're going into the AFC and the NFC championship game, and the New England Patriots are going to be playing on the road against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are favored by 3, but we've kind of seen the Patriots play some good football in recent years. What's the feeling up there in Boston about how the Pats are going to do and whether the Pats are going to make it to the Super Bowl?
Well, I think that there was a high level of surprise that what happened against the Chargers. I think in the Boston area there was a real skepticism about this team because, one, they were 3-5 on the road this season. They were undefeated at home, but they couldn't win on the road, and they struggled at times against some of the good teams in the NFL. So there was a high fear amongst Patriots fans and Bostonians that the Chargers will come in and win, and especially with the way the Chargers played, you know, with winning at Kansas City and then winning at Baltimore, where they were basically punched the Ravens in the mouth and then held on. There was a real concern, and if you really think about the Patriots, it's like, well, how long does Tom Brady have left? You know, where the hell is Rob Gronkowski? Where did he disappear to? There was a real concern that this would be it. This could be the end of the run. And for them to go out and basically take a 35-7 lead at halftime and, you know, blow out the Chargers and kind of turn the second half into garbage time, you know, because let's face it, the 41-28 final score really wasn't indicative of the margin of victory and how lopsided the game was, although I'm sure – for those who bet the over on that game, that pleased them. other than that, I think that there was this – now there's just kind of like, well, wait a minute. Maybe they can beat the Chiefs. Maybe this team, as far as it is, because everyone knows they lost Josh Gordon to his issues, unfortunate issues, and he was their only speed receiver. They don't have a lot of great skill players. Gronkowski is a shell of himself, and who knows if he'll ever get that back. You know, Brady has had his issues. Edelman's had some drops. I mean, throughout the entire roster, there isn't a guy that you say, that's a guy in his prime. You know, so if you look at the Chiefs with Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and some of these other guys that they have on their roster who are in their prime, who are just can put up the big numbers, there's a fear there that they can blow out the Patriots. But also, if you look at the first meeting, 43-40, and secondly, I think if you give Belichick now time to prepare for the Chiefs, it could be a very tough game. I think there's a lot of hope that maybe they can squeeze this one out and get back to the Super Bowl, which I think might be one of Belichick's greatest coaching jobs if he gets this team to the Super Bowl. I mean, sometimes all you got to do is make it. I always – point back to people, grew up a Lakers fan, and I always thought Magic Johnson's greatest feat was getting that 91 Lakers team to the finals. That was not an NBA finals team. That was a miracle how they beat the Blazers. And sometimes if Brady and those guys get to the Super Bowl with this squad, I think that might be one of Belichick and Brady's greatest feats, regardless if they win or lose, considering all the troubles they went through this year. So there's a hope. There's a hope that Belichick is smarter than Andy Reid. And Andy Reid's going to become playoff Andy Reid again and choke it. And, you know, maybe Belichick figures out a way to outcoach him and outfox him one final time with this team and get to Atlanta for the Super Bowl. So there's hope. I don't know if it's optimism, Chris, but there is definite hope that maybe the Patriots could turn this around and make, you know, beat the Chiefs in Kansas City, but that's going to be a tough task.
Well, that which is difficult is not always impossible, and the over-unders on both games might be a little low, even though they're kind of high. The Patriots-Chiefs over-under is 57, and then the Rams and Saints, who had a bit of an interesting game earlier this season, the over-under on that is 56.5, so You know, we're just going to wait and see. But Super Bowl Sunday is not all that far away, and it's a national holiday here in the United States. And from a purely fan perspective, I want to see Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, because that means that the game's probably going to go down to the final play, and the ball will be in Tom Brady's hand, and he'll be throwing a pass toward the end zone. And we've seen that happen a couple times before. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So, Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe, I want to thank you for joining us on the show. To our listeners, you can follow Gary at G Washburn Globe on Twitter. You can follow me at Sheridan Hoops on Twitter. And Gary, I'm looking forward to see how your prediction comes out tonight. I'll be out at the game in Brooklyn, the Celtics-Nets game. And I'm expecting a close one, but I'm also expecting D'Angelo Russell to be the key player in this game. D'Angelo Russell can get to the foul line somewhere between 6 and 10 times, Nets are going to win this game. D'Angelo Russell just doesn't get to the line the way that Spencer Dinwiddie does, and the Nets have a duplication at the point guard position that I think they're going to have to address prior to the trading deadline. If they address it in the right way, I wouldn't put it past them to win a first-round playoff series. So, but Sean Marks thinks I'm crazy for saying that, because I tell him that every time I see it, and that's why he hasn't made any trades. But eventually Sean Marks is going to have to make a trade. So, again, Gary, thanks for joining us on the show. And everybody, please read the Boston Globe. It's one of the best newspapers in America, always has been, always will be. I got a lot of friends who've worked there over the years, including Peter May. Will McDonough I've worked with, and God rest his soul. And the Boston Globe is been around a long time and will continue to be around a long time. And their sports coverage is really second to none in the newspaper industry in the United States. So with that, Gary, once again, thanks for coming on the show. I look forward to seeing you down the road. And I'm going to close it up with my three words I say at the end of every show. And out.